Okay. Welcome everybody to the Sacred Body Podcast. I'm thrilled today to have my teacher and my friend Rochelle Garcia Saliga here. She is the founder and lead teacher of Innate Postpartum Care Training, as well as a certified midwife and a mother and an incredible teacher. I'm going to let Rochelle introduce herself properly, and before you do, Rochelle, just to say how honored I am to have your voice here, and will recommend that everyone just search your name and find all the podcasts you've been on and all the free classes that you offer online and all of your curriculum, because every piece of it is of such value for our culture and our world right now. So thank you, Rochelle, for being here and for doing the work that you do. And if you would just give us an intro that kind of expresses who you are and where you are today.
Okay, that it's a good one to express who I am today, because I'm in a matrix of things right now, but I'm happy to be here and I'm happy to be talking with you. And let's see, I'm a mother and I'm a wife, and I feel like those are important things to name because they occupy a lot of my time and a lot of my energy, and they're my priorities, right? So we homeschool. I live in northern New Mexico, and my husband and I have been married 10 years this year, which it's just an interesting place to be, I feel like, in marriage, because I feel like we're just getting to like a new level of relationship, and I'm just coming into like a whole new time that I don't really know what it is yet, because I'm just like on the precipice of it, you know. And my work, like you said, is really dedicated to innate postpartum care. So I mean, my life really is mothering and in relationship with my husband and being on this land here where I live, and everything that pertains to innate postpartum care is training, which is really the return of the return of midwifery model of care for human health and well-being, because it's really not just the postpartum time. It's really has to do with how we take care of ourselves, how we take care of each other, and how are we in relationship with nature. So I really feel like midwifery in its essence is like caretaker, protector of natural law, nature's law.
Which is kind of epitomized by the woman's body, the birthing body. Exactly. And I love the way that you center that, like, motherhood, matrescence, as this epitome of what nature is all about: creation, sustenance, transformation, death. And your tagline even being midwifing a cultural shift, if that kind of sparks you to say anything about a little bit more about what this work is. Your words are so beautiful.
So I really feel like my experience on this planet has been is that, like, I grew up kind of as like a cultural anthropologist, but like studying the dysfunction of Western modern culture from the inside out. Like, I lived within it, but not of it, to be able to understand all the intricacies of how it works and how it's really more than disservice to life, how it's really entirely structured against life itself, how modern culture, I would say, it's a death culture. Not in the sense that it's honoring of death, but in the sense that instead of being aligned with life energy and that which is life exalting, it's aligned with death and that which is debilitating, that which is dysfunctional. So I grew up as this cultural anthropologist, and I'm getting feedback. Are you getting feedback? No. Okay. So I grew up like that, and in my early 20s came into midwifery from political activism, really. Like, I was like a street activist organizing protests, organizing teach-ins. I was the one on the bullhorn during rallies. And in my early 20s, I realized that I didn't want to spend my life fighting against something that I didn't believe in, and that I wanted to put my life energy into the creation of what I do believe in. And so, you know, we all have our work on this planet. We all have our specific charge. We all have our way of, those of us who are change makers, you know, about how we're facilitating this change and this shift on the planet. But I really feel like my piece in it is that we need a complete overhaul. You know, my work is not how to fix aspects within this system that's broken. It's just how to create an entirely new system. Mm-hmm. So when I say midwifing a cultural shift, it's really to be in first and foremost for myself, how to be in contact with my essence, with my original design, and then how to be of support of other people being in contact with their essence and their original design to birth a new world.
Really. Mm-hmm. It makes me think of, you know, in the aftermath of the last election, how the kind of mantra became resist, and it bothered me. Like, it bothered me more what was happening politically, but just that word in particular, it's like, I don't feel like that's actually what we must do. And I, you know, I'm not the first person to think this or say this, but the word that felt good was persist. Persist in doing what is true to you. Persist in doing what you know is right. Keep going. Instead of that negation and kind of like tense struggle energy of resistance. That's what I hear in how you came to the creation of your work.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And I mean, I feel like foundationally, because of the teachings that I received, I mean, what I was taught is like, what you resist does persist. Uh-huh. You know, and so to me, it has never made sense to be in resistance, or I guess up until a certain point I was, but then it came into my awareness that whatever we're in resistance against, there's just going to be more of it, right? And so yeah. How to create a new pathway where there is not resistance, but where there is, like what you're saying, focused persistence. And I don't know the words. It's like persistence, determination, but it's like also mixed in with hope.
Mm-hmm. Would you talk a little bit about, you know, what is so clear, and I think the nexus of your work is your spiritual practice. And could you just talk about how that came into your life, and was that the turning point for you, moving from this resistance activism to something more celebratory?
You know, the spiritual piece came into my life once I let go of the resistance, actually. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like because of the spiritual piece that I let go of the resistance. It was like I let go of the resistance, and then I had this huge spiritual, influx in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like in my early 20s, and it was kind of like one after another. It was that I came into this awareness that I didn't want to spend my life fighting against something I didn't believe in. And I had a conversation. I was in university at the time. And I had a conversation at that time with a professor there who said the word midwife, and I just knew, like, that's what I was, that's who I was, even though I didn't even know what a midwife was. And then literally within 2 weeks of that, I had met a woman, and she's like, I know I don't really know you so well, but I really vibe you, and I want you to come to my birth. And I didn't even know people at that time who were having babies, really, but she was, and she was having her baby at home. And so I went to her birth. And, you know, and then within a couple weeks of that, I went into my first ceremony, and who ran that first ceremony is who ended up becoming my adopted dad, like through spiritual adoption. So it was just all in that time, you know. And sometimes people say to me, because I feel like, you know, what we all really want is mentors, right? We all, I feel like for most humans, it's like this longing to have a mentor. Who wouldn't want to have a mentor, you know? And so sometimes people will say to me, how did you find these or connect with these mentors? And I don't, I really feel like it's destiny. You know, I don't, I, there wasn't like something I did, you know, I really feel like it was mapped out for me for it to be like that, you know? And whatever the design of it was that I really had to go through these first 20 years on the planet, really disoriented and confused, and this cultural anthropologist within an entire environment that didn't feel like my own. And then all of a sudden have this tremendous orientation through mentorship and through ceremony and like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, my life completely changed at that time.
And where was the invitation to go to Mexico for your study and your apprenticeship?
That was really because for me, when I, so I went to that first birth, and then how did it happen? I went to that first birth and I don't know, something just inside of me had this knowing that like I really wanted to be able to learn from midwives where the tradition hadn't been interrupted. And I don't know that I had the language for it like that at that time, but it was just this knowing of like, I really wanted to be able to learn where the tradition wasn't interrupted, to experience what was it like within a midwifery model of care, that didn't have to like stop and then start again how it had happened in the United States.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like it happened like that everywhere throughout the United States, but in the general, it did, okay? And it's not like there wasn't interruption with midwifery in Mexico. Like obviously there was through colonization and all of the impacts of that. But at the same time, the interruption was less, right? And the tradition was still intact.
Mm-hmm. Makes me think of Ayurveda in the East under colonial rule. Ayurveda went super underground, and as it emerged, you know, it emerged to like great appreciation and welcoming. But I think also, and maybe this is similar to midwifery in the United States, a bit of an adaptation so as to be taken seriously by the dominant culture, which was still very much informed by colonialization. And that's different. And it can, I do think that there are threads of the original teachings that are intact, and we can find teachers and mentors again. But I'd love for you to kind of riff on this, understanding that these teachings, this wisdom is innate to us. And if we are called to a particular tradition, we have to cultivate a significant amount of self-trust if we're going to understand the tradition fully, instead of just trusting a teacher or an external source.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great conversation to have. I mean, because, you know, I had this idea when I went to Mexico of like what I was looking for, you know, and probably a lot of it was really romanticized, honestly. You know, it's like we have these ideas that we're going to be able to study with people in these, you know, uninterrupted lineages. And I really had my bubble bursted like 18 million times over, but I feel really grateful for that, because I don't at this point in my life carry these notions of romanticizing indigenous ways of life. Okay. Which I feel like we can all do from our different perspectives. I mean, we can get into one line and we can talk about appropriation, but even when, as we come back into contact with our respective lineages, you know, there could be this grief, and in that grief, there's this romanticizing, right, of our respective, even indigenous ways of life. And I don't have that anymore because of my experiences in Mexico. And so what I did find in Mexico was I found, you know, it's like the physical movements of what I witnessed at birth was like this grace and this ease of midwives attending birth with the ease that I might drink a glass of water. You know, like there's no doubt or second thought, or there's none of this stuff that really runs, I feel like, in a lot of midwives within modern culture. It just is, you know, there's, you're just in it. And there's no second guessing. And so I really feel grateful to have received that imprinting, and just to see what does that actually look like in the flesh for midwifery care to be working like that. But what I also learned was that midwifery care, even in these like quote unquote uninterrupted lines, are absolutely interrupted, right? Because we're all living within the modern world. And so I saw more Pitocin, which is synthetic oxytocin, being used in home births in when I was working with traditional midwives in Mexico than I ever have in my life. So I saw more cervixes being born with a baby than I ever have. I've never seen that actually outside of that context, because so much Pitocin was used and the contractions were so forceful that when babies were being born, so were cervixes. So then I also learned how traditionally you resolve prolapse of cervixes, wow, right? And all of that, you know, comes from colonization still, because that comes from the government, quote unquote, helping to teach the traditional midwives by, you know, giving these medications, which absolutely can be life-saving, but they're improperly, like they're actually not taught about, right? So they're being improperly used. And so I just witnessed a lot of dysfunction like that too. I mean, without naming it all, you know, I witnessed a lot of that, you know? So coming in, like your point was like coming into traditions that like aren't our own, but like still how to come up to that, how to follow that, like how to be in our center with that. So let me see how I want to address that. What I feel like in my bones is that all of our traditions on this planet, in their essence, are virtually identical. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people could hear that and, you know, think some kind of way about what I'm saying. I'm not talking about it in some homogenized version, you know. And clearly there's variations. And the variations to me exist because the traditions grow out of the earth. The traditions pertain to the land on which they're from. So, you know, a ceremony that happens here where I live in northern New Mexico comes from the land here. Like, it is part of the land base here. And the original people to this land have this ceremonial way because the ceremonial way comes with the land, mm-hmm. okay? And, you know, some of my ancestors are from Central Russia. And so they're going to have a ceremonial way that comes from that land because we were all at one point in time land-based people. Indigenous means of place. We're all of place. All of us have ancestors that were land-based, earth-based people. So even though the structures of the ceremonies that belong to our respective ways may look different, even though, you know, the physicality of the traditions may look different, the essence of all traditions are the same. Mm-hmm. And they're to honor life, and they're to honor God, you know, the Holy Spirit, whatever word we want to give to the divine, and they're to honor each other. And I feel like that's really important for us to reconcile with in the modern world. And I feel like actually it's a place where, especially in the United States as a collective, that we really get stuck, okay? And we get stuck because of the colonial history here, and we get stuck because racism was perfectly planned and mapped out, and it's serving its function of separation and division. And so I really feel like for us to collectively get to a place where we can stand in that truth, you know, stand in that embodied truth, we really have to deconstruct all the bullshit that we've been fed, you know? But that's how it is for me. And that's how it was taught for me, right? So a lot of times, you know, out in the world, when we put ourselves out into the public, you know, mm-hmm. so I do my teaching thing, we are making ourselves vulnerable, right? And in that vulnerability, we welcome in tremendous beauty. And there's also shit that comes up in terms of people's judgments. And so judgments that I know come out towards me is like, well, if my adopted father, you know, through spiritual adoption was Ojibwe, then I'm teaching Ojibwe teachings. And so I'm taking something from him and his culture and selling it. Okay. And what I was taught by him and what I was taught by my elder, what I am still taught by my elder, has to do with the reunification of the human race, that's their language of how they taught it to me. Okay, they're the ones who taught me that all spiritual traditions are the same. They're the ones who taught me that, yeah, you're coming into this sweat lodge, or you're coming into this Native American church ceremony, you're coming into these ceremonies that pertain to this land because this is the land that you're on. But you're not coming in here to pretend like you're something other than who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're coming in here to heal your own lineage. And so the way that I was taught was never about these are Ojibwe teachings or these are Carib teachings from my elder, Donna Maria from Trinidad, but it was that these structures still exist. And so we come into these ceremonial structures, these ceremonial ways of life that still exist, to reconnect with our own respective lineages, because when we heal our respective lineages, then we're contributing to the collective healing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what I believe, and that's what I feel, and that's what I know in my bones. And I know in my bones that if I would have been born in China, I would have ended up in Chinese traditional ceremony, because then I would be on that land and that ceremony goes with that land. And I also feel like if I would have been born in Central Russia, I would have made my way into the traditional ceremony from that land. So in my relationship with ceremony and birth, because birth as like the ultimate ceremony of them all, it's really that root of humanity's ancestors. So it's like, I think about it as like connecting with our original ancestors, and our original ancestors took care of things the same way, because it was about a life prayer
and survival and sustainability and what is best for everyone.
Right.
You know, there's so many places I want to go from this one conversation or this one kind of phrase, but how do I want to start? I want to share some of the conversations that you and I had through talking about these themes while I was preparing for my birth. And for everybody listening, Rochelle was a huge support to me overcoming a lot of stress and difficulty right at the very tail end of my pregnancy as far as where I would give birth, and kind of overcoming feelings of like, where am I allowed to give birth? That was really a feeling that I had. Where am I allowed to? And there is this real challenge that a lot of us face of what you named before. Do we fight against a broken system? Do we push to fix elements of the system that are broken, or do we create a new system? And I think we're all a little more familiar with the energy of disappointment and antagonism and making the best of a bad situation versus taking our power back and creating what it is we truly want. And I remember you said to me, you know, the way that you celebrated your 40th birthday was bringing your elder here, and all of the work that that entailed, the money that that involved, the scheduling, etc. And I'm sure staying in ceremony with your adopted dad, it's a lot of effort. It's scheduling. It's like a priority. And still the energetic output for me, it felt so much greater, the energetic output to create what I wanted and to take my power back, rather than to just kind of like acquiesce and be pissed about it or resentful about it. And so I'd love to hear you talk about that, because that is such a huge force operating over our society, and why I think so many of us end up traumatized and or in really fucked up situations that we don't want to be in.
Totally. And I think you like put such perfect words to it. And I think that it's like that because it's easier, because we're used to it, you know? So whether that is like our own individual patterning, you know, it's hard to make change. Mm-hmm. It is. You know, whether we're talking about, you know, any lifestyle habit, right? When we have a pattern and a way of doing things, anytime we're going to create change, it's, we're going to meet resistance. And when we're talking about creating ways of life, when there is an entire collective or an entire system that's set up differently, it's a huge force field, you know? And I think about it like with my own birth experience, because wherever the place is that we give birth, you know, like the country, let's say, to wrap our minds around it, there is a collective force that we're dealing with within that country, you know, and each country specifically is going to have a different kind of collective force field around whatever it is. And in the United States, for example, there is a massive, dense force field around birth, you know, and whatever we believe as an individual, we are still within the soup, we are still within the matrix of the collective.
Yeah.
And so why is it so much harder? It's because we have this massive force field that we're in, you know, and it is a lot of resistance that we're getting matched by that collective is how I think about it, you know. And then I feel like also when we're talking about birth and that experience, it's like all of our own lineage stuff comes up. And so we have so much material to be looking at and to be dealing with. And then we have also to question, who are the people who are actually going to be able to support me in this with all of the matter that I'm dealing with? And simultaneously, we're in the collective that is oriented towards death rather than life. Of course, it just is easier to go with those things that we don't agree with and we don't like, and it is easier to be pissed off. It's easier because it doesn't ask of us to use our creative capacities of creation, right? There's destruction. This is how I can think of it. This mainstream culture is oriented towards destruction. So we all have a really great program with that. We don't have much skill collectively still in terms of our capacities of creation, okay? Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's what we're learning right now as a collective, is we're learning, okay, great, we can really destroy the shit out of this planet. I'm not going to say we. They can really destroy the shit out of this planet. You can drop a bomb. You can destroy things pretty easily. But what about creation? We're really immature in our creative capacities collectively still. And so then when we're coming into this, how do I want to do this for my own life? It's really edgy, because where have we learned that skill from of how we can create our lives? And I'm coming up against that now. Like, I just turned 40 and I feel like I'm coming up to this new edge. And the new edge is I'm really done living in a nuclear family setup. Okay, yeah. Like really over it. And I've always been really over it. But then it's like, well, how do you do it? And so right now, I'm having to be in this process with myself of like, it is just easier to do this because this is how it's set up to do. The entire system is designed for it to be like this. And I really can't do this. So I have to really dig deep out of the resentment and the anger and the frustration and all the feels that I feel on a normal everyday basis. Okay. Being a mother in the modern world within a nuclear family, within a completely dysfunctional collective. And I have to really be able to set that aside, to tap into the capacity that I know I have to be able to create something different.
Yeah.
It takes tremendous focused determination. And at the root of that is a belief that it's possible. So then to me, it gets into what I would call is like belief medicine. What do we believe is possible? And what do we believe is not possible? And whatever we believe is.
And having the courage to stay with that conversation kind of as long as it takes, I'm certain has so much to do with the years of cultivation of your own active voice and self-trust. And it's still hard, right? So like, we think about just the dominant culture and what most of us are being held by and fed with our entire lives, kind of regardless of what's happening at home, even. Like, even if there's a little bit of a bubble, which is likely not the case, but it's sort of like we go out into the world and what dominates is still, like, nobody wants to be abnormal. I'm, you know, as much as we can say, like, oh, I don't mind not fitting in, or I'm okay being an outsider, I really don't believe that. I think every single person wants to belong. You want to feel, like, ease around your life choices and your desires. And having this, what's the word I want? I'll just use capacity. The capacity, fortitude to sense a desire and stay with it long enough to see it to fruition. I mean, on a much smaller scale, it's like, why do so many relationships end badly? Why, you know, we're kind of like serial daters in our culture, like, so confused, and I can't have what I want, this doesn't work, this person isn't enough, rather than kind of taking responsibility and sitting in the hard conversations and cultivating our maturity. I think using that word was perfect. It really is about a maturation process that, you know, each of us has to take the responsibility for in order for culturally a shift to happen. Yeah. And by the way, sign me up to live on the land with you.
Yeah.
I'm such a new mom, but I feel that. I mean, I don't know if it's specific to being a mother, but there sure has been a shift every time I have dinner with my family on Sunday, especially if my brothers are in from out of town. I'm like, why don't we all just stay? Like, there's plenty of bedrooms for every. Why don't we all just stay? This feels so much more normal.
I know.
Yeah. And, you know, in the kind of initial creation moving towards that end goal, you have already created such a, I mean, I think just compared to the dominant culture, such a unique life for yourself, growing your own food, being in, you know, the place where you want, and particularly, you know, it's widely known that so much more of the industry in this country is becoming like entrepreneurial women, because this is how I can make it work to start my own business so I can be with my family. So would you speak to that a little bit about specifically the creation of your business so that you could have this life? Mm-hmm.
So I feel, I mean, just to like keep it concise, I feel like it really started with me getting clear about what my needs were, right, as a new mom, because our needs are always shifting. And I think that's something that we kind of forget about, yeah. You know, collectively, like we think that we're going to need something now and then it's going to forever be like that. But it's like, we're dynamic beings, and like what I need now, totally different than what I needed 10 years ago, you know, and it shifts. And so then we have to shift with it too. And so it was this piece of getting really clear on what wasn't working for me. And what wasn't working for me was the dynamic of my husband going out of the house all day, every day, and me being home alone with our daughter, because that's what I did for the first 3.5 years of her life. And being like, this is not what I want. Our family is separated all the time. When he comes back, he's exhausted. And, you know, we have a couple hours and we're doing bedtime and I don't see him. There's no connection. And then, you know, as our daughter was getting older, it was just like, and I don't think I want to send her to school. I mean, I never thought about these things even before I was in it, you know, mm-hmm. But I'm like, I don't know that I want to send her to school and she's going to be away from us 8 hours a day from who is the teacher? Like that we're calling teacher, someone who I don't even know is the teacher. And so all of these things that just are so commonly accepted in the mm-hmm. modern world, you know, for me, it was really abnormal. And I was like, I cannot do this, you know? And I'm not talking about these things from some like elaborate place of privilege. Our family had a really hard ass time the first 3 years of my daughter's life. I mean, my husband made $10 an hour, literally. And I stayed home with her, and we were on food stamps, and I would call churches for assistance to pay our electric bills. And it was within this whole reality that I was still like, I cannot do this, you know? And so then it became like, okay, I cannot do this. So then what is it that I want, you know? And I had to clarify that for myself. And what I wanted was to create a life of abundance and prosperity on all levels, you know? And what I wanted was to fulfill my purpose on this earth. And I wanted to fulfill my purpose while creating prosperity and abundance. And that's still like an orientation point for me. Because in that, right, in order to be able to speak those words and to believe those words, we have to believe that we have the capacity to generate prosperity and abundance through our purpose, right? Mm. And most of us compartmentalize, and it's like, my purpose is over here. And over here is how I'm going to make my money because X, Y, and Z. And I was like, I don't want to do that. I want to have a life that's completely fused. I can't compartmentalize. And so that was kind of the grounding prayer to my work. And everything really lined up for me when I got to that point. And really what I feel like a huge force was is learning how to be with anger constructively. Because my, I don't know, my constitution, let's say, I run a shit ton of anger. I how I feel inside of me, like the force of anger is I feel like I could turn into the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
Like I get that kind of anger. I feel like I could lift up a car and freaking toss it, you know?
I think that's why I like you so much.
That's why.
Like I see you. I see a beautiful reflection of myself. Who's learned how to channel that.
Yeah. And so it was like learning how to be constructive with anger instead of destructive, right? Because mm-hmm. it's really freaking easy to be destructive with anger. But like, it was just this one day and my daughter was little and I was so like, Incredible Hulk-like, you know, in terms of what this energy that was running through me. And I just remember like breathing and then it became neutral and then it just became this force. And then it was like I stopped judging the anger and it just became kind of this tremendous ball of energy, okay? And really what I saw, it was like an arrow, like a bone arrow, like you're gonna shoot at something, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, this is what I'm fucking doing. And I just took all of that neutralized energy, but it was like still really massive. And I threw it at this direction of what I wanted. And what I wanted was to create a completely different way of life than what I had at that time. And that was kind of how it all started. I mean, obviously there's a million other details, but that's the foundation to it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's actually good for me to be speaking this out now because it's like, it's that thing. It's like, okay, that was then. And then I all this came into manifestation. And now it's like, it's not like it ends, right? It's like, now it's the next level. And so now I'm like, okay, I have to get into that place again and do that for the next level or the next spiral around whatever language we want to use in the creation process.
Yes. And it's such a, you know, you speak so beautifully and naturally about harnessing energy and transforming emotions into something substantial that is useful because they are of the body, they are material, even though they feel ephemeral. And so to what extent is that innate to you, that understanding of how your life force works and what has come through practice and your ceremonial work, that part of your It's a subtle aspect of your teaching, right? Because it's such a deep part of you, but I wonder about your process to getting there. And, you know, some of it to me, like moving my body and speaking somatically comes very naturally. And I can speak to like being drawn to teachers or how I got language for it. So share with us.
I feel like definitely this is not something I had for the first 22 years of my life in terms of any outside reflection of this. I feel like I was just thinking about the other day, it's like who I am now is really who I've always been. Like I can remember feeling like this as a little girl of 3 years old. But what it is now is that like I've cultivated who I am, you know, like who I am becomes it's just more and more expressed. And so I feel like, yeah, like this for sure is innate to me. Like I feel like I was born how I am, but I feel like there's people who help to bring out the essence of who you are, you know. And for that, I would say my adopted dad, Ken Littlefish, and my elder, Donna Maria Camp, as the primary people in my life, you know. And it has been through ceremonial work, you know. It's like my relationship with them is not so much like, I'm going to sit down and transmit teachings to you. It's really like watching and being with them. You know, so much of how my adopted dad taught me was just being with him and seeing how does he take care of situations? How does he hold himself? How does he speak? And how does he deal with what presents itself to him? You know, like I remember so many times being in ceremony with him and some wacky situation would present itself and I would just watch him to see how is he going to respond to that one. And also having an awareness of like, I am so glad that I am not the one who has to respond to that, you know, because this is like in my 20s, I was like, I don't know shit. I'm just going to observe what is going on here and just seeing how they took care of things and how they do take care of things, you know. And I feel like that's really how we learn as humans. We learn through being able to see living examples. So that I feel like is kind of the crux of some of our dysfunction now, because who are the living examples that people are around to demonstrate, to embody maturity, spiritual maturity? There is not a lot of living examples like that, you know? And so that is where having teachers and having mentorship and even having other women, other people around us that, that live exemplary lives, you know, that live lives that that we feel aligned with, that we would like our lives to be like, is so important because it helps us to cultivate those parts of who we are.
Absolutely. And I found you, I learned about you, I think just when you had formally announced that you weren't going to travel to teach anymore. It was like right at that point in your teaching, and I know that you had been traveling a lot before that. And what you named and what I experienced as being so special and essential to your teaching is the prayer, is the ceremony that you can tend to in a really personal, specific way when it's on your land, and inviting students into your house. It's so intimate. And I see how a day in the life flows, and to be held in that space was such a massive part of the download of information, because you just feel that, right? And it's like, oh, now I have space for all this information to slot in and stay. And I, you know, perhaps this is just a way of me saying thank you for being so generous with your life and being one of those people that I certainly see as living an exemplary life, an example of maturity. And I think with maturity comes, or maturity comes from being that much more committed to what we know is true, and like not making wiggle room for anything else. Like your life by no means seems rigid, which I think can be like the fear for any of us making change. There's actually so much more creative flow of your life force, flow of your imagination, because of the structure you've built.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I mean, for sure, like the way that my family sees me is I'm rigid, right? Like that. That is the word that they would use to describe me. But the way that I feel about it is like I am in defense. I'm not in defense. Like I am protective of of what feels life honoring and what is sacred for me.
Yeah.
And so what, like, you know, you mentioned this piece before about belonging, and I do feel like it is like a really normal, natural piece to us. It's part of our wiring of our nervous system to want to belong, you know, like it is an innate aspect of our beings. And I also feel like, I feel like I just crossed this threshold this past year of really understanding that I will never belong, like, on this planet. You know, it's like I won't have that feeling of like I belong, because I don't belong to the collective in the way that it is. Okay. And I have a prayer and I have intention to cultivate a community, like a land-based community, mm-hmm. where there is a sense of belonging. And I long to feel that in a very like selective community sense. But I don't feel that anymore. It's not part of my being to feel like I belong in regards to the larger collective, you know? And that has come with really, it's like this whittling away. I feel the more that we're clear of what we don't want, the more that we can be clear of what we do want. And so we're able to kind of whittle away and shape shift our lives with this clarity of what we do want. And so what I do want is what I have right now, you know? And so I am protective of it because it's like my sacred container, you yeah. know? And to add on to that, you know, this might be like a tangent, but somehow to me it feels like it's mm-hmm. wrapping, like weaving it all together, is there's that saying, right, that says like necessity is the mother of invention. And I, as I've gotten clear of how to be able to describe like, my business practices, let's say, or creating a way of life that we want, is to really just get clear about our needs, you know, and then you create the structure to match what the need is. So we first have to know what the need is. It's like, do you need to be home? Do you need to be out of the house? Do you need time alone? Do you need time with more people? Do you need time on the earth? Do you need time? And when we go about these things, you know, it really helps us mold. It's kind of like a piece of clay or whittling wood. It helps us to mold our lives that's centering our own needs. And I feel like that to me feels like the ultimate feminist way to hold a business and to hold our lives, really. You know, and I just had this conversation with a friend of mine the other day. And we were talking about both of us, like for me and my family and her family, like we're the real decision makers in our family. Like mm-hmm. we're the, whatever we decide our husbands are going to support. Okay. And clearly that has its negatives, which is like, sometimes it's hella annoying to constantly be that one to be deciding everything. But we're like, we would way rather have it like that than to be in situations where we have to be asking for permission. Like we have friends who have to ask for permission from your husband, from your partners to make decisions that are best for your family. Like that's not part of my reality. I don't have to ask permission. I don't even have to engage in conversation if I'm really clear about something. Yeah. If I'm really clear about something for my own health or the health of my family, that's what it is. And my husband will back me on that, even if it's a really radical shift. So those are all the dynamics, you know, and it's for better or for worse. It's a lot of material to work with, you know, in all directions and all dimensions, but I'm grateful for that piece because I feel like as mothers within a family system, we are like the barometer, you know, of the weather of our family.
For
and
sure.
So as the barometer, we know what we need to do that's in support of our family's health.
It's so powerful, that piece of it, to, I mean, it's like the ultimate honoring of the feminine, and that language really resonates for me. It's not a gendered thing for me, the feminine and the masculine, so I just want to name that. But to center the feminine as life-affirming, and the masculine is the structure that has to be in place to support that. And, you know, what you just described, it does go with gender, but there you are, the life-affirming center of the home, and there's your husband holding the structure and, like, making the moves and doing what needs to be done to for the continuation of life. I feel that way with my partner as well. And that has been overwhelming for me because I've never been trusted by another person so much. And that, like, whew, to have myself and my self-trust and my intuition honored and centered is profound. And that, of course, is a huge piece of why I was able to have the birth that I had and have this completely life-altering experience that left me feeling pride in myself that I had never had before, trust in myself I had never had before. And so these relationship dynamics are, it's so essential. And it comes with trusting emotion, knowing that emotion can be transmuted, trusting our needs, having these conversations, having mentors, like everything that was discussed in this conversation really is like centering life, centering the feminine, centering the mother. And I'm just so deeply honored to be your student.
And I whenever you say that to me, I'm like, oh, but you're such a wise being. Like, you cannot possibly be my student, Stacey.
It feels right to me. And it also, I just had this conversation with Maren Green from Indie Birth. I feel like I've always landed at the feet of my teachers without much effort. You came into my life and I showed up and here you are. And it's as much like sitting at your feet, looking to you as a teacher, and you reflecting back to me the teacher that I am. So it's mutual, it's honor. I'm just so grateful and can't wait to share this conversation with the world.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me here to talk today. And I'm so happy for you and just feel so, I don't know even if there's words in the English language, but I just feel so grateful that you had the birth that you had.
Thank you. Thank you for being a part of it. And for everyone listening to us, I'll give you many ways to find Rochelle in the show notes, but also know that she has online training as well as in-person training and leads several free classes often. So you can find her at, why can't I?
My website?
Yeah.
InnateTraditions.com.
I'm like, it's not innate postpartum care. I lost my mind. InnateTraditions.com and at InnateTraditions on Instagram if that's your flavor. We've got a loud airplane going overhead right now if you're hearing that sound, but thank you everybody for listening. Thank you, Rochelle. I can't wait to see you again. See you in February.
Yeah, thank you, Stacey.